On today's episode, we go ape for apes, fetuses are weird, and what did your music say about you? All that and more coming up. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Our Science. I'm your host, Alan Collier, and joining me today is Sarah Vokey.
Hello, everybody.
And Katie Ellsworth.
Hi.
You guys want to talk about apes?
You want to talk about apes.
I do want to talk about apes. I love the word apes.
Alan, how much you tell us about apes?
Ape time, baby.
We're running on ape time.
Our first paper today comes from Inverse.com and the Kyoto University's Kumamoto Sanctuary in Japan. And it has to do with, you guessed it, apes.
What?
Scientists present new evidence that great apes possess the theory of mind, which means they can attribute mental states to themselves and others, and also understand that others may believe different information than they do. So, first thing we need to do is give more of a description of what the theory of mind means, because they don't really do it in the article.
From my understanding, theory of mind, just from like a philosophical point, means that you understand that other creatures also have a mind that thinks separately from yours.
So does that mean that toddlers don't have theory of mind until they can pass the Three Mountains test?
It absolutely means that toddlers do not have theory of mind. They think humans get theory of mind around 4 years old. The core concepts involved in theory of mind are beliefs, desires, and intentions. And it's your ability to not only understand your feelings in relation to those things, so your beliefs, your desires, and your intentions, but also someone else's, and the understanding that they are going to have different information and therefore different beliefs, desires, and intentions than you will. That's theory of mind.
Well done.
Thank you.
That is a nice description that you came up with just by yourself, right?
Yep, definitely didn't look at a Psychology Today article.
No, of course not. I do find it interesting, actually, like, when you learn a little bit about, like, childhood development and childhood psychology, there is a test specifically for, I guess, theory of mind. Basically, figuring out the point where you realize that other people have different viewpoints and know different things from you. And it's called the Three Mountains Test. So basically what it is a child is set up, and there's a researcher who sets up a little diorama in front of three big cutout mountains. So it's maybe a little diorama of like a house or whatever. And the first thing they ask is like, okay, what do you see? And the kid will like maybe draw what they see or say like, I see a house. Then the researcher will sit behind the mountains and they'll ask, okay, now what does the researcher see? Before kids are able to like process that people see other things from them, they'll say that the researcher sees exactly what they see.
Like fools.
Yeah. But then after that point, they're like, the researcher doesn't actually see anything because they are behind the mountains. And that is a summary of my first year psychology knowledge.
So now that we've explained what theory of mind is, do you want to explain what apes are?
Apes go ooh, ooh, ah, ah.
So apes, which the article describes as chimpanzees, bonobos, orangutans, and gorillas. And there's been a debate for essentially 40 plus years of whether or not any animal has a theory of mind other than humans. And specifically, the best candidate seems to be apes.
Well, yes, because hypothetically, they're the closest in us to mental capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So apes be smart, kind of.
Do apes be smart?
Apes be smart in the same way that humans be smart. Let's say that.
Debate.
The trouble is you can't show apes Three Mountains and get them to say.
Unless they're Coco the gorilla who learns sign language.
Yeah.
This is true. That would... Damn it, if only Coco were still around, we could be like, hey, sit down. We gonna try something new.
Well, also, they need 47 apes for this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, they need to be able to replicate trials.
You need 47 Cocos.
We clone Coco 47 times.
And teach her sign language 47 times.
Exactly.
If you clone Coco post-learning sign
language... That's not how that works. Not in this world, maybe in fantasy world, where you just copy yourselves, unless you want to have Calvin and Hobbes replicator.
Yes, that's exactly what I want. Transmogrifier.
Yes.
All right, so we got 29 chimpanzees, 14 bonobos, and 4 orangutans walk into a bar, and one of them is theory of mind. So let's talk about this experiment.
It's complicated.
It is complicated, and there are pictures.
I do enjoy that they were like, it is a slightly complicated
experiment. Literally described it as that.
They hedged their bets as like, we're doing our best to explain this in an article, but it's kind of complicated, so if you don't get it, that's your fault probably. Like, I think they know that this is hard to explain.
I don't know. I actually...
They do a pretty good job.
I thought they did a really well done.
I understood what the thing was.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for previous experiments that we've read about that have had a lot of moving parts, I understood this one so much better.
Yeah.
So I would attribute that to some pretty okay writing.
I think they did a pretty solid job on this. This is the experiment. They've got a human actor dressed up as an ape that they've nicknamed Kong.
I like that they nicknamed him also.
Yeah, that's a nice touch. Like, but...
it's not Jim in a suit, it's Kong.
Well, they had to differentiate between the human actor playing a human and the human actor playing an ape.
Okay, here's my question, though. Why was he dressed as an ape?
Because they do kind of briefly touch on it in this article, but not really. It's because it's the idea that an ape is deceiving a human.
Does that matter?
It was part of their experiment. They don't explain it in the actual article, but in, like, the journal article it's mentioned.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the Kong comes in, the human dressed as ape named Kong comes in, hides an object. There's two boxes.
Okay, hold on a second. I need to talk about the fact that in the actual abstract for this article, they don't say that the guy left and went behind the barrier. It says he scuttled behind the novel barrier.
Oh, okay. Well, we're not quite at the scuttling yet.
Scuttled. The actor scuttled behind the novel barrier.
Man, that's what makes science writing more fun. Like, if you can use the word scuttle, like, I'm gonna remember that. Like, what did they do? They scuttled.
Crab walked.
Also, I just love the word scuttle. That's such a good word.
Alright, Kong hides... There are two boxes. Kong hides an object under one box with a human actor watching.
Actor.
An actor.
Talent.
An actor.
A dramateur, yes. If you will.
Yes. The actor sees the object being hidden under one of the boxes. This is called the target box. The actor then scuttles behind a barrier.
Yes.
Well behind the barrier, Kong comes back in, moves the object to the other box, and then just decides, screw this, takes the object and leaves with the object in hand. Now there are no object under any boxes. All while the actor is behind the barrier. Then the actor comes back out from behind the barrier and sort of does a little 6-second, oh, which one will I pick, and then picks one. The apes are watching all of this, presumably one at a time. I would like to think of a 47, like, or 46 ape peanut gallery watching this all at once, but I don't think that's true.
No, especially because they had different treatments because some of them saw.
Yes. Yes. So then the treatments of this, the two different variations of this is that one time the barrier is opaque and you cannot see through it, and one time it is transparent and you can see through it. And the apes have been introduced to this barrier enough that they should know that it's either opaque or transparent.
Actually, there's an important distinction here that I thought was interesting because they were like doubly testing theory of mind / memory here, because they exposed the apes to these like transparent or opaque barriers prior to doing this whole box test. And then during the box test, they can't actually see whether the barrier is transparent or opaque. So the apes have to assume based on their previous experience with the barrier.
Yeah, which does seem to add like a potential variable.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm not really clear why they had so many variables. Also, why did they have the thing go from one box to the other and then just leave?
Yeah, there are a couple things. Not too many things, but a couple things about like it seems slightly unnecessary. But it is, you're dealing with apes. You have to take a lot of, like there's certain things you have to take into account when you're dealing with animals about like, they're not going to understand that this is an experiment necessarily, so you've got like, this is a barrier, spend lots of time with this barrier. But yeah, I agree.
Learn to live with this barrier. Love this barrier.
Yeah. So then the apes are watching all of this, and the test is that when the barrier was opaque, they used eye tracking technology and noticed that the apes were looking at the first target box longer while the human was making his decision about which one to pick. The theory here being, if you pardon the pun, that they know that the human is being tricked and they're watching the box that the human has seen with the object underneath it, expecting the human to pick that box because they know the actor has been tricked.
Or they believe the actor has been tricked.
Yeah, they believe the actor has been tricked. They believe that the actor is going to pick this box, so they're staring at it and saying, he's going to pick that one. Where if the barrier is transparent and the apes are like, well, the human knows there's no object there, they're just looking anywhere. They don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
And they did notice a difference.
See, as far as proving theory of mind, I think this is a really interesting way to do it when you can't get, like, a verbal confirmation from someone about what they think that someone else knows. So I actually found that really interesting.
Eye tracking's an established thing for that.
And the article says right at the end that this does not mean the debate is settled, does not mean that apes absolutely have theory of mind. It's just, and this is how they describe it, puts one more point up on the Great Ape Intelligence Scoreboard.
The Great Ape Intelligence Scoreboard in the sky.
I don't know. I just thought it was a really neat, like, I definitely, reading through all of the different variables, I was like, I'm a bit confused. And then they got into, like, their results. I was like, oh, now I understand.
It is. It's a hell of an experiment. Like, I think it's the coolest, like, single experiment we've talked about on the show so far. Because a lot of times it's just...
I honestly can't help but, like, in my mind, compare it to the one about crows from a few recordings back that was kind of just, like, a big confusion pile compared to this one.
I think it was episode 5 or 6 or something. Whatever one has crow in the title, if you want to go back and...
People, go back, listen,
I wasn't
compare.
On that one.
The crow, I know we did not have a good time.
Nope.
Sarah and Ian were on that one, and we did not have a good time with those crows, but I have a good time with apes.
Ian had a bad time with crows. We had a great time with the apes.
Apes, apes, apes.
Yeah.
Get fucked, Ian. I will tell you about a very excellent Newfoundland instrument. It is called the Ugly Stick.
The what now?
The Ugly Stick.
What kind of music does it make?
Ugly.
It is traditionally a stick. You attach a rubber boot to the bottom so that it has a stomping. You attach a tambourine so it has a shaken. You have maybe a bell on it so it does a bellin. It's basically a one-man band stick, and it makes your percussion. And that's your ugly stick.
This is a special type of, like, Canadian East Coast redneck type.
This is, you've been snowed in and isolated, and you really want to make some music, but all you have is a stick, a boot, and a bell.
I would like to say that I googled this quickly, and the first line is, the ugly stick is a traditional Newfoundland musical instrument fashioned out of household and tool shed items, typically a mop handle, with bottle caps, tin cans, small bells, and other noisemakers.
There we go.
The instrument is played with a drumstick and has a distinctive sound.
Oh, you play with a drumstick? I thought you just smacked it against the ground a lot.
Well, I mean, it's got a boot on the bottom, so you kind of like stomp and hit and stomp and hit.
Oh, it's a stomp and hit. Yeah. I was thinking more of just a stomp, and then the things just made noises because you were stomping.
I mean, like, it's a multifaceted instrument. It is part of my culture.
So you were well familiar with the ugly stick?
Sure am. And the fiddles.
Well, but like, fiddle's an actual instrument.
Don't disparage the ugly stick.
It's more don't group the fiddle. The fiddle's like, no, don't group me in with him. I don't know him.
You know what? I'm going to be having Thanksgiving dinner with one of my cousins from Newfoundland, who also happens to live in Vancouver. So next weekend, I will see if we can make an ugly stick to show you.
You want to know my favorite Newfoundland thing?
Sure.
For my one trip to Newfoundland? Jig's dinner.
Oh,
I've had jig dinner once, and it was it was great. I loved
heart,
it so much.
My soul.
I hope this is a good thing from Sarah, and I haven't killed her, but...
My kingdom for jig's dinner.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, it's so good.
It's... My memory of it, I've only had it once, and it was
Someone
quite a while ago. My only
me?
Memory of it was just... Okay. It's just puddings, I think, is what I remember from
jig's
it. It's just
dinner
various
is...
liquidified meals, and it's great.
You made it sound real bad.
No, but it's great. Oh, I don't remember it looking good at all. I remember it looking like puddings
basically,
mashes, and then you just eat it and it's great.
Yeah, so basically jig's dinner is another word for a boiled dinner.
Oh yeah, but I'm the one making it sound bad. All right, lizard babies.
Katie, lizard babies.
Babies with lizard hands.
All right. Our
like
second paper
hands.
Today, shut up, Katie. Our second paper today comes from the BBC and Howard University. Babies in the womb have extra lizard-like muscles in their hands that most will lose before they are born, medical scans reveal. Probably one of the oldest remnants of evolution seen in humans yet, dated by biologists as 250 million years old, a relic from when reptiles transitioned to mammals. I read that headline and thought, oh, I get that. That makes total sense. And then I read the article and I understand it less.
Oh, yeah. Well, the article's poorly written in and of itself. Yeah. But, like, the context and the concept and the content.
The concept I still get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they brought up questions that I didn't know I had and then didn't answer them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's super cool. It's also, like...
It is super cool.
It's neat that they're finding these, but it's also just confirming to me that fetal development is, like, the world's weirdest thing and... There's a reason why there are entire courses in undergrad that are literally just dedicated to understanding how babies develop from one cell to whatever the fuck we are.
I remember one of my craziest experiences in first year biology was learning how hands form. Because you start with just like a nub, and then all of the cells between where your fingers are gonna go die off.
I know. It's so weird. Like, embryo development is just fucking weird as shit. It's
yeah, you've like, because you've like webbed hands and feet in the, like, it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got 9 months to build very complex things, and so, yeah, you know, weird,
you know,
things happen.
It's a bit like if you look at a haircut midway through, you know, it's gonna look a little wonky. If you look at a baby midway through development, it's not going to look like a baby.
Nope.
No, it sure isn't. And there's the great thing is that all blastocysts at some point are all just an asshole. Everyone is at some point just an asshole. It's great. Did you know that?
Would you say that I am the blast with the ass?
No.
No, all blastocysts, which are the earlier stage of embryonic development, at some point it becomes just an asshole. Like, everyone, that's literally all you are.
I've been told that before.
Is this because of the same thing? That's where it starts, and then that asshole splits into the mouth and actual butt. It's great.
Sir, I'm afraid you have some problems with your actual butt.
Not your mouth butt.
No.
Your butt butt.
Your out butt, not your in butt. Imagine if we had evolved to the point where we just call your mouth your in butt.
Your in butt, your out butt, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
No.
No, really? Really, Sarah?
Oh no. Let's talk about lizard muscles.
Kiss someone right in the in butt.
No. Stop this.
All right, lizard muscles. So the theory I think here is that essentially all of your fingers have these, like, lizard muscles that allow them a bit more dexterity, and then they all disappear except for the one in your thumb. And that's why your thumb is more dexterous than your other boring non-thumb fingers.
Katie, you have the most biology experience here. Is this correct?
Yeah, Katie, you're most lizard-like.
That's kind of how it works. That's actually, no, from what I was reading in the article, that's their hypothesis.
That's the
yes,
hypothesis.
Yes, that is, yeah, it's more of a hypothesis.
They're hypothesizing for sure that it's these extra, quote-unquote, lizard muscles that remain in the thumb that are what the origin of the thumb dexterity muscle is from. Because they've already, apparently, they throw this in at the very, very end of the article, and they're just like, oh yeah, we already knew that this happened in feet.
Yeah. I love that. Is that their voice? Just random, like, hey, also, this happened.
Yeah, it's just like, we're just confirming that this happens also in hands.
You might be wondering, well, why do we lose these muscles when we could also then have dexterous fingers and toes? And you're right, we would be, as they call them, superhumans. I don't know that that's that much superhuman. Yeah. That just sounds like slightly different human. But we just don't need those muscles. And so in evolution, if it's not that something's bad, it's that it's probably not worth the resources it would take to maintain and grow those muscles.
And also, correct me if I misunderstood this, but earlier in the article, did they not also say that people who are born with some of these extra pieces tend to have birth defects?
Yeah, limb deformities.
Yeah, but I mean, a birth defect is just honestly anything that's abnormal. It isn't.
But like, just saying, if they say at the top, like, people who are born with this have limb deformities, and then at the end, they're like, if we had these, we'd be superhuman. It's like, well, no, you'd have limb deformities.
Thing is, though, they say when they do persist, they are sometimes linked with limb deformities, which just means that sometimes if they don't go away like they're supposed to, then there's just some weird extra muscle in your body and the rest of the developmental is going, why is there a muscle here?
How do I do this? How do I deal with this?
The rest of your development is based on you not having those muscles there. So they could, if if your body is sort of assuming you don't have muscles there, and then you do, they're going to get in the way of things and start.
Limb.exe has ceased functioning.
Yeah.
Are it's you an encountered
crash
a problem.
And restart. Yes. Your fetus needs to update.
This is also, like, not new information, because, like, people might be going, oh my god, what? We have muscles that develop and then delete? I mean, we also have gills at some point as embryos.
Yeah.
I would like to also still have my gills.
I don't think you would want to have your gills as much as you think you'd want to have your gills.
No.
I want gills.
I mean, how well do fish do above land?
Well, real well, because that's where we all came from.
I would like to have lungs and gills. I would like to have the option.
Yeah, so, I mean, the tailbone is called the tailbone because it's where our tail would be.
It would be. It's actually called the coccyx, but, you know.
Yeah, Alan, get on that coccyx.
I mean, there's all kinds of processes in the human body that are kind of, like, not really necessary and horribly inefficient, and Jesus Christ, why are these there? And that, for me, is the biggest argument against intelligent design.
Yeah.
Because it was not intelligent.
No, it's not. If you study the human body in detail, you're like, nobody would have intentionally put this there.
The left recurrent nerve? Do you know the left recurrent nerve?
No, what is that?
It starts at your larynx, and then instead of going, like, just from your larynx up to your brain, it goes around your aorta and then back up for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just does it because it can, and it's like, screw you. Sure. And there's another nerve, like, right beside it that goes just straight to your brain. But this one's like, nope, gonna go check out what the heart's doing.
This one's like, okay, that's cute, but I'm different.
And it's a real pain in for various reasons and can cause a lot of problems, and it's just dumb.
It's just because that was the way that it
grew. Yeah, we were designed very poorly, mainly because we weren't designed. We just kind of happened.
You know what else is cool about that left recurrent nerve?
What?
You think we have it bad? It's the same thing in giraffes.
Oh no.
It takes a 15-foot detour down around the heart and then comes right back up.
It didn't cause enough problems to kill off a significant portion of the offspring, therefore it stayed.
Yeah, because that's what evolution is essentially like. Can you still bang with this? All right, keep it. Our third and final article of the week comes from SciPost.org and Whitman University. Rebellious music genres such as rap, punk, and heavy metal do not appear to be linked to maladaptive personality traits, suggests a new U.S. study. But conservative music such as country and gospel were weakly linked to traits that capture neurotic, hostile, and eccentric tendencies. And I'm going to put my own stress on weakly linked.
Yeah, I do appreciate, like, to start with, the fact that this whole article, like, all of the researchers' quotes are just like, this is not causation, this is weak correlation. It's a neat correlation, but please don't use this as a tool.
Yeah, this strikes me as the researchers really know that this isn't, like, something people should be taking all that seriously, but they also really want to share it because it's really just silly and fun.
It's silly and fun, but it also contradicts, like, directly contradicts a lot of stereotypes about that kind of music, right?
Because, commonly held beliefs.
So the biggest the important takeaway is that this whole, as they call it, problem music theory of, like, if you listen to, like, if you're one of those kids listening to the heavy metal, then you're going to be, you know, you're a troublemaker and a scallywag.
Yeah. Have you met David? David is, like, the sweetest, nicest person. He loves dying fetus and cannibal corpse. They're great.
Does he know the fetuses have lizard muscles?
Has he heard of the fetus lizard muscles?
Yeah. That was their second album.
Anyways. No, I think this is super fascinating. And
it is. As they say, this is not the thing where you can ask people what they use for entertainment and then immediately figure out what their personality is. Like, it's not going to work like that.
No. I mean, no, but in my experience, metalheads are, like, the nicest people. They're all nice.
Yeah, but then you're getting into, like, anecdotal stuff there.
I'm not sure how.
We're getting into science where they're like, don't take this seriously.
Yeah, it's so, like, take the lizard muscle seriously, take the ape seriously, don't take this one. This one's more fun.
Also,
and it is. This one's a blast.
This one has perhaps one of my favorite sentences that I have read for this podcast.
Ooh. Let me try to find it. Let me see if I can guess.
Okay.
Katie, please. You take a guess and I'm going to take a guess.
Okay, you guys guess. I'm ready.
I mean, personally, my favorite one was the part where conservative music such as country and gospel, along with faith-based movie genres, were linked to traits that capture neurotic, hostile, and eccentric tendencies. That was my favorite.
Given that the wedding I just attended was heavily country-based, that is entirely hilarious to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're like that because we're all... We want to hear that people who listen to country music are objectively worse than us. Music is objective and we're right.
Music clearly... Actually, no, music does clearly link to personality because it was like, people who are prone to strangeness, oddity, or eccentricity in their thinking report enjoying a wide variety of music and movies. And I was like, oh, hey, it's me.
That's my favorite sentence.
Oh, is that your sentence,
That is my
Sarah?
Favorite sentence. Just people who are prone to strangeness, oddity, or eccentricity in their thinking. I don't know why, but just people who are prone to strangeness and oddity. Like, what a descriptor.
That's me.
I'm picturing just a very normal-looking person. I'm picturing a very normal-looking person in, like, a research setting, and they're being asked these questions. Like, would you describe yourself as strange or odd? And like, oh, yes, no, I very much would think I would. And then they, like, say good day and get on their horse and ride away.
But no, seriously, like, how do you...
It's all self-reported. That's the thing is, if you click into... I clicked through the study, and everything here is, like, self-reported, which is why later on they say... They're just like, well, you're not sure if it means that people who are, like conservative / religious entertainment music, are they more neurotic, hostile, and eccentric? Or are they just, you know, more willing to acknowledge personality failings?
Yeah, I did actually find that part of the article where they're looking at potential reasons why people with these traits would prefer certain music genres. I thought that that was really interesting. Like, maybe people who are more prone to... What was it? Introversion are more like...
Introverts don't like super enthusiastic music.
Yeah, because it's like, do they not like the enthusiastic music, or do they not like the settings in which you would hear that enthusiastic music?
I don't like the music. I'm an introvert, and I don't like the music, so I'm going to stand by
Alan,
that.
My name's Alan, and I don't like this.
Yes, but again, anecdotal and shouldn't be...
My name is Alan. There were no apes in the music. I was not a fan.
What's the point?
I would self-identify as listening to a ton of different music genres.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't think I would too much. So what is that? Okay, check our cheat sheet. What does that say about me?
That you don't listen to a lot? Well, what do you listen to?
Yeah, mostly like classic rock and various
forms of
rock.
He listens to dad music.
Yeah, you listen to Cage. You like Cage the Elephant, right?
I do like Cage the Elephant.
Yeah.
What does that say about me? Is that in the article?
Cage the Elephant. Imagine if they gave us, like, a cheat sheet of just, like, if you listen to this band, you are...
Yeah. Well, and that's sort of what they're saying you can't do.
Like, exactly. Don't use music tastes as horoscopes or personality tests.
I mean, you can, but it won't be scientifically sound.
None of those are scientifically sound. Pseudoscience.
If you're talking to someone and they say, like, oh, I'm a big fan of Marilyn Manson, don't just, like, immediately call the cops.
I mean, I will immediately call the cops, but... Not because they like Marilyn Manson.
Do you listen to Marilyn Manson?
What?
No, who do you listen to that I was really surprised by?
I don't know.
There's somebody. Maybe Rob Zombie or something. Or something
probably
like that.
Rob Zombie. Okay. I love that nasty metal man. I shouldn't, but I do. I mean, like, yes, I listen to a lot of different types of music. He is but one from a vast array of musicians and musical types that I enjoy.
Yeah, I've been alternating between singer-songwriter and, like, pop punk right now.
Oh, pop punk.
I would describe you both as strange and odd, so...
Exactly. I was going to say, do I fit odd, strange, and eccentric? Probably.
Yep.
Would you describe yourself as unusually fearless and dominant in a narcissistic sort of way?
I don't think so. Which probably,
sometimes.
Which probably speaks well for the not being a narcissist thing.
Well, and you talked about them like self-reporting it, because how else are you going to determine that someone is strange or odd unless they tell you they're strange and odd?
I don't know. You would have to come up with one hell of a rigorous experimental design, and it's pretty obvious that these guys were like, this is not very serious.
I feel like it's more so, though, I didn't read through what their actual, like, questionnaire or, like, interview process was, but I don't think it's just like, do you self-identify as this? It was more just like, what is your opinion on this? What is your opinion on that? And they probably compared it to, like, social norms.
I really wouldn't put much weight into this. Yeah. I really would not put much weight into this other than, like...
It's neat.
The fact that you can't determine... people's personality based on music.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that was the reason that I thought it was so interesting, is just because, like... like, it's something you encounter still on a daily basis. It's just like, you see people wearing like a metal shirt and you're like, oh no, they're scary. But like in my head, they're just like, oh no, they're all teddy bears.
I was going to say, I have never met a metalhead who wasn't a huge dork.
I like people going, oh no, they're scary. Flee.
Well, no, my grandma was very taken aback by the metal shirts that David wears.
My mom once read the back of a metal shirt that someone I brought home was wearing once. In a really funny, demonic voice. It was great.
Someone I brought home. Look, I found this person.
I found Can this I person.
And with that, we're all out of time. We thank you for listening. I was your host, Alan Collier. Thank you to Sarah and Katie for being here. And if you have any comments or questions about the articles we discussed, you can tweet at us at rsciencepod on Twitter. That's OURSciencePod on Twitter. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.